someone who I have long admired. I've read most of his books, I think. So I want to welcome to High Velocity author, speaker, and deadhead David Muirman Scott. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, Todd. Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Well, normally we would make fun of your weather up in Boston, but it's actually snowing and 25 degrees here, so I guess we can move on past that.
Yeah, well, it's 50 degrees here, so...
Explain how it's 50 degrees in Boston and 25 degrees in Atlanta.
I don't know. And 50 in Boston. I'm in my shirt sleeves.
Lucky you. Lucky you.
Hey, David. Joseph Stone Payton here.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I got a question for you, though. Why the three names? Why do you do that?
Ooh, real good answer. Because David Scott is a very, very common name. And there's a David Scott who walked on the moon. There's a David Scott who's an Ironman triathlon champion. There's a David Scott who's a congressman. And so for search engine optimization purposes, if somebody enters my full name, David Muirman Scott, they get me and only me. If they enter David Scott, they get all sorts of imposters. So, gosh, anytime anybody's thinking about a product name, you know, got to check Google and make sure that you can own the results.
Well, I'll tell you, if I used my middle name, David, I'd lose half our audience. So we're going to...
I think both of you guys have fairly uncommon names. Yeah. I would guess you're probably the only ones that pop up.
Not a lot of schnicks out there. So
yeah.
Well, hey, there are so many things that you and I can talk about, and I can't promise I won't ask a question about the dead or the Apollo program later. But the real purpose this morning is to get into it a bit and talk about your latest book, Real-Time Marketing and PR. So explain to us why you wrote that book now.
Sure. So my first job was on a bond trading desk. I worked at Dean Witter in New York. Actually worked in the World Trade Center in the mid-1980s. And the entire bond trading world completely was revolutionized by computers going into the trading room in the 80s, where at that time... In the 70s and 60s, bond trading was an old boys clubby kind of thing that did not very much happened. But then with instant technology, you can find out what's going on in the news right now. Where are things trading right now? All over the world, as a matter of fact, the entire industry was transformed. Today, fast forward to 2010. With services like Google News and Twitter and Facebook and all of these sites, social networking sites and real-time news sites, anybody can participate in real time. And in fact, it's an incredible competitive advantage if you're the first organization or the first person to react to something. If there's a regulatory change in your industry and you're the first person to talk about what that means, it's incredibly powerful. If there's something that happens in the news and you're the first company that creates a product around it. You remember when the Chilean miners came out of their hole a couple of months ago? They were wearing Oakley sunglasses, and over a billion people saw those sunglasses only because Oakley were the first people to decide, hey, this is pretty cool. Let's get those sunglasses on these guys right now. And they did that in real time.
One of your early chapters, David, is entitled The ROI of Real-Time Engagement. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, I wanted to try to calculate what the benefit is of this, because a lot of cynical business people always want to ask, oh, what's the ROI of doing this thing, the return on investment? So what I did was I did an analysis of the Fortune 100 companies. I sent each of them an email to their media relations department and asked them how their plans and processes and procedures have changed as a result of real-time communications. And interestingly, 28 companies got back to me to say that they're now participating in real-time communications. The other ones either didn't get back to me, or in fact, in the case of 11 of them, I couldn't even reach them because there was no way for members of the media to reach out to them through the web, which is a big problem in itself. So it turns out those 28 companies that do engage in real-time communications, I did an analysis of their stock prices. And from the end of December 2009, end of last year, through beginning of September, which is when my book was due to the publisher, the stock prices of the companies that engaged in real-time communications, on average, went up about 3%. During that time, the market as a whole, the S&P 500, was down about 1%, and the companies that did not engage in real-time communications were down on average about 2.2%. So that 5% swing between those that do and those that don't That's the ROI of real-time communications.
The key point you just made there, though, is 28 companies out of 100 in your research on that ebook that you did, which leaves over 70 that did not respond. I'm stunned that a Fortune 100 company doesn't appear to be equipped to deal with real-time marketing. Why is that happening still?
Isn't that crazy? I'm stunned as well, but because I do have a lot of relationships with people who work in large companies, and I do work for some large companies, I do understand it. It's basically, I think, an MBA spreadsheet mentality that most businesses are managed under. And I've got nothing against MBAs, nor do I have anything against spreadsheets, but if your entire planning process in your organization from top to bottom involves long-term campaign-style marketing and product development, note the war metaphor, by the way, campaign.
Got it.
then I think what happens is people get into this kind of slow and plodding mentality where, you know, oh, we got a product release coming 6 months from now, so, you know, let's get heads down and deal with that. We've got something that we need to do around advertising for the Super Bowl, so, you know, why should we care about what's going on right now? And the problem is that those organizations that focus nearly exclusively on long-term just simply cannot react to right now, today, this moment. Right now, there are people out there talking about your company, your products, its services. They're talking about it on Facebook and Twitter and on blogs, and the media is talking about it. And if you're not reacting to them, you're being left in the dust.
Your book goes into, obviously, a lot of detail on how to get into this, but what are a few critical initial steps that an organization has got to take to get into this real-time mindset?
Yeah, and thank you for using the word mindset, because it really is a mindset. I think it's kind of like exercise. You have to train yourself to adopt a different lifestyle and make it a part of your lifestyle, just like exercise becomes a part of your lifestyle. The first thing that I recommend is that companies listen in real time. And that's really simple to do, because there's free services that anybody can use. And by the way, it doesn't matter how big your company is. You could be a sole proprietor, all the way up to a Fortune 100 size company. But a couple of the free listening tools that I think everybody ought to take advantage of. One is Google Alerts. And it's just simply a way that you can have Google alert you through email, typically, anytime a particular keyword or phrase hits on the real-time web. So it could be a blog post or a news story or something. And then you will get an email that says, hey, something just happened, check it out. Really, really essential for all businesses to have. The second one is some kind of Twitter alerting mechanism. I happen to use TweetDeck, but there are other ones. They're free. And you can be alerted whenever your company or products or category of product or whatever it's important to you is mentioned on Twitter. So the first step is to listen and see what's going on. Then once you have a sense of what's going on, the next step, quite obviously probably, is that you can begin to react to that.
Talk a little bit, if you would, David, about that reacting, because the two of the disciplines that really stood out for me were monitor what's being said, which you're beginning to touch on, and the other is engage with the market. What are some practical ways to engage with the market without, how can I put this, running them off, pissing them off?
Yeah, so first thing is that you need to react in the same media where people are talking about you. So, for example, what I mean by that is if people are talking about you on Twitter, the right place to react is on Twitter. If somebody's written about your company on a blog, the right thing is to leave a comment on their blog. And it's surprising how many people don't want to do that. They see something happen in a blog and they want to react by issuing a press release or something completely different. So first thing, react in the same media. Second thing is, anytime somebody is thoughtful in what they say about you, it deserves a reaction. Whether what they say is positive or negative, it deserves a reaction. And I think there are so many companies that don't want to react when something has been said that's negative about their organization. You know, I had really bad service at this restaurant. If somebody tweets that, Their expectation is almost always that they won't get a response. You know, I had a really terrible experience at this restaurant. I'll never go back. But that's actually an opportunity. It's an opportunity for your company or you personally to engage with that person. Tweet them back and say, gee, I'm really sorry you had that issue. You know, when and where can I help? And then frequently the right thing is to take that offline. So people see that you've reacted in public, and then you can ask the person if you could just contact them offline to make it right and to hear them out and what they have to say. The only real exception is that if the person is not thoughtful and are actually trying to be a bully, and in that case, if they're clearly just being a bully and trying to engage in order to get some kind of reaction, in that case, it is okay not to react. But if someone's thoughtful in what they've said, even if it's negative, it deserves a reaction.
David, when it comes to a Fortune 100 or probably even a Fortune 1000 company, most of those organizations have an agency of record. Is the problem maybe not necessarily with the company itself, but maybe their agency isn't buying into this real-time world?
I think in many cases there is a lot of truth to that. And in fact, many times there's battles going on between agencies because social media and real-time communications doesn't really fit neatly into the agency structure that most companies have. You know, most companies will have an investor relations agency of record, a public relations agency of record, an advertising agency of record. Sometimes they'll have multiple advertising agencies, one for print, one for TV and whatnot. And then all of a sudden you throw into the mix real time. And it's funny, the agencies will frequently fight over, oh, geez, that should be me, that should be me, that should be me. So, that can be a real big problem. But I think the most important thing is that companies, no matter what the size, could be a 10-person company or a 10,000-person company, need to empower people at the front end of the business to be able to react without having to ask permission first. So often, communications has been traditionally governed by, well, you know, we can't really say anything unless we ask the boss or we ask the lawyer or we ask the agency or whatever it is. But these kinds of instant reactions now require that people at the front end, whether they're customer services people or communicators or marketers or product managers, whatever it is, have the authority and the ability and the desire to jump in when it's appropriate without having to ask permission first. And that requires some guidelines in place that empower those people to do that.
David, it's my radio show, so I'm going to ask the question I really want to ask. One of my favorite books in 2010 was Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. I've got to ask, here's a band that broke every rule in the book, but it worked. Why?
Because they treated their fans with respect. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. I mean, they did. They broke every rule. They allowed fans to record concerts. They made their money by touring rather than album sales. And all the way back to 1965 when they started, it was all about bringing fans together with them on a joint kind of odyssey. And so many other bands just completely did the opposite to that, and the Grateful Dead ended up just becoming incredibly iconic, and until the death of Jerry Garcia in 1995, they were one of the most popular touring bands in history. In fact, I think 5 years out of the 30 years that they were in existence, they were the most popular by ticket sales touring band in the U.S.
David, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning. I cannot wait to get my hands on this book, Real-Time Marketing and PR. What's the best way for our listeners to learn more about your services and to get their hands on this book?
The book should be available most everywhere in the United States, physical bookstores like Barnes & Noble and Borders and whatnot, and all the online bookstores. To reach me, my website is my full name, DavidMiermanScott.com, and I'm on Twitter, which is, my Twitter ID is DM Scott, so DMSCOTT.
Well, David, thanks again for joining us this morning. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
Oh, my pleasure. I enjoyed it. I'd be happy to come back.
Terrific. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Sure.